Okay. Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Erevin. We're daf Chav Zayin. We should be starting the new parak today in Erevin, but we have a little bit more to finish off from the previous parak, so we're going to do that right now. And then we'll move on to start the third parak of Erevin. Just to conclude the second parak of Erevin, Rabbi Eli heard three things from Rabbi Eliezer. They're somewhere in the category of out of the norm, not the normative halacha, but there are three things that he heard from Rabbi Eliezer, although he admits that he cannot find corroboration on any of these three things that he heard. The first thing that he heard from Rabbi Eliezer is the maximum size of a karpuf. A karpuf, an uninhabited, a non-residential area that's enclosed by walls, which min hatorah is reshus hayachid, but mid the rabbanim you're not allowed to carry in such an area. So the maximum size it could be is 5,000 square amos or a beis hasaim, two saws, one of those two. It's equal to one another. Rabbi Eliezer is quoted as overheard by Rabbi Eli, says that it can be a core. It could be 30 saw. So that's the first thing that he heard from Rabbi Eli. Thank you. That's the first thing he heard from Rabbi Eli, and he could not find corroboration on that. The second thing he heard from Rabbi Eli regards the issue of bittul rishus. Bittul rishus, you have members of the chatzer, one of them forgot to add and to contribute to the Erev. The actual Erev itself is bread collected in a basket by every member of the chatzer. It has to be every member of the chatzer. If one person does not contribute to the Erev simply does not work. The Erev is unifying. It's a unification of everybody in the chatzer, and if one person doesn't contribute, that's not called unification. That's not called Erev. So one person forgot to contribute to the Erev, so what do you do? There's a solution on Shabbos, which is the following. After Shabbos begins, it's too late. You can't contribute bread. So what do you do on Shabbos itself? You do what's called bittul harishus. You relinquish your rights. You relinquish your rights to the property, to the common property, the chatzer. And by doing so, now basically you're no longer a factor in the unification. And that's what's called bittul harishus. Now, what exactly are you being mevatel? So that's subject to a machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chacham. The Gemara quoted our Mishnah, which is obviously Shitas Rabbi Eliezer, and then the Gemara quoted the Chacham, which we're going to see later on the Masechta, I believe Daf Samech Tes. Either way, yes, Daf Samech Tes. Either way, Bitzel Rishus means that you're being Mevatel. What exactly? According to Rabbi Eliezer, you're being Mevatel everything. Meaning you're relinquishing your rights to the Chatzer and even to your very own home. According to the Chachamim, when you're being Mevatel Meshus, you're being Mevatel only the Chatzir, but not the rights to your very own home. Okay, what's behind these two positions? So as the Gemara explains, according to Rabbi Eliezer, now that Shabbos comes and you're being Mevatel both Chatzir and your house, so that means on Shabbos, you're a guest in your own house, according to Rabbi Eliezer. It's not your house. You relinquished yourself, you removed yourself from rights to this house. Now, you're not giving up ownership of the house, but in other words, in terms of bittul harishus, you're relinquishing your rights. People can come into your house on Shabbos, according to Rabbi Eliezer, take an item out of the house, and carry it into the chatzer. What do you mean? It's not, how can they do that? It's transferring from a house, a non-Erived house into the chatzer. It's not your house. You were mevatel rishus to both your house and the property. According to the Chachamim, however, no, you're only giving up your rights to the property, to the chatzer, not to your house. The Gemara pointed out yesterday that according to Rabbi Eliezer, because your bittul is so systematic, it's so large, you don't have to mention, you don't have to go to every member of the chatzer and say, hi, I want to be mevatel meshus. Whereas according to the Chachamim, no, because it's surgery, because you're only being mevatel your rights to the chatzer and not to your house, you got to go to every member of the chatzer. Good. That's all a quick review of what we did yesterday. And then the Gemara points out, the Gemara wonders. We are in the Gemara Amalei Rav Papa L'Abaye, halfway down on the Amud Chavavam and Beis, and the Gemara wants to know like this: Amalei Rav Papa L'Abaye L'Rav Lazer, I Amar Lo Mevatlinan Ulerabanan I Amar Mevatlinan Mai. Okay, and I want to know the following, says the Gemara. Look, we now have learned that according to Rabbi Eliezer, you're mevatel both, and we have learned according to the Chachamim, you're only mevatel your rights to the chatzer, not to your house. I wonder, says the Gemara, are these default settings for both of them? Where, with any default setting, right, we know this with our computers, with any default setting, you could change the default. Okay? Or, no, is there something more than just it's a default setting, and there's something real behind their positions, which is non-changeable. You cannot change it. So we're going to go through each position. So the Gemara says, let's start off with, I believe we're going to start with Rabbi Eliezer. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm sorry. Time of the Rav Elazar Mishum to Kasav Mevatel Rishus Chaser Rishus Beis Obitel. V'hai Amar Ano Lo Mevatlinan. So on one hand, we could just simply say for Rabbi Eliezer, it's a default setting, meaning that when a person just simply says I'm Mevatel of my Rishus, he means Chaser and house. But if he says I only want to be Mevatel my rights to the Chaser, but I want to retain the rights to my house, he has every right to do so. Odilma time in the Rav Elazar Mishum to Beis Below Chaser Lo Avidi Inish the Daire. Or the Gemara says, no, it has to be both, because it's a package deal. Meaning Rabbi Eliezer believes that there's no such thing as a house without a chatzar, or a chatzar without the house. They are so intrinsically linked that once you're being mevatel yourself from the chatzar, you must be mevatel yourself from the house as well. And if you so decide, you know, I only want to be mevatel myself from the chatzar, it doesn't work. So perhaps the chikam or lo mevatlin alav kol kamine, it's just simply not within his power. Afagav damer dairina alav klum kamar, and so therefore, according to Rabbi Eliezer, if it's not a default setting, but he has to be mevatel himself from both chatzar and house, and if he tries to do one, it will not work without the other. Okay, so that's one question according for Rabbi Eliezer, and we're going to ask the same question for the chachamim as well. Ula rabbanan. Now, it's the same question. Is it a default setting for the Chachamim that a person just simply, when he says, I want to be Mevatel my Rishus, by default he means only from the Chatzar, not from his house, but if he so chooses, for whatever reason, he can be Mevatel his rights to both Chatzar and his house, or no, is there something more than just a default setting? Is it just simply a default setting where, when he says, I'm mevatel my rishus, we understand it to mean just chatzar, not his house? And this person, for whatever reason, wants to relinquish himself from both chatzar and house, so he could do that. O Dilma, time of the rabban, mishum de lo avinish, the mesak nafshe legamri beibayis vechatzar. Or no, it's more than just a default setting. A person would not do that. Nobody would relinquish himself from both chatzar and his house, v'haviki orech legabayu, and be like a guest in his own house. Meaning that's just simply not normative. A person wouldn't do that, and so therefore it simply doesn't work. V'hai kiyama mevatlinan, lav kol kamine. It's not within his power to do so. So again, it's the same question for Rabbi Lazar as it is for the Chachamim. Are these default settings, or is it more than just default settings? Is it that it can only be done, bitter can only be done this way, according to Rabbi Eliezer, both Chatzar and Bias, according to the Chachamim, only Chatzar, not Bias? The answer, very quick, Amalei, Bein L'Rabbanan, Bein L'Rabbi Lazar, Kevin DeGale Daite, Gale. These are default settings, which means that according to Rabbi Lazar, if you only want to be Mevatel yourself from the Chatzar, you may do so. And according to the Chachamim, if for whatever reason you want to be Mevatel yourself from both Chatzar and house, you may do so. Gemara's answer is these are just simply default settings.
If he doesn't Mevatel, what happens to the others?
If he's not Mevatel, so no one can carry?
Nobody
can. In other words, he has ruined it for everybody. That's the beauty of Erev. It's all or nothing. I don't know how beautiful that is, but yes, that's how it only works with everybody.
What if it's not asked? If he's neutral,
this comes up right now only by way of the Mishnah mentioning it, but this is not the. We'll talk more about it later in the Masechta. But you can have somebody who's. What if somebody? We'll discuss this later in the Masechta. What if he doesn't believe in all this? Meaning, I like the Torah. I just, you know. Chachamim, Shlomo HaMelech, it's not for me. Right? The Gemara later on, we'll talk about such an individual. Now, I heard, according to Rabbi Lezi, you could use this, it's a strange type of maror, it's called Arkavlin. So my Arkavlin, I'm Reish Lakish, Atzvasa, Charuzisa. Okay, and Rashi tries to help us understand some soft growth that grows around the palm. Apparently it's edible. Anyway, it's very bitter. That's what Rabbi Eliezer used. And again, the conclusion is it's, you know, out of the norm. This isn't what we use. The Mishnah Psachim, right? Third parak, I think. So the Mishnah Psachim talks about the five different vegetables that a person can be yotzei with marer. By the way, we only, of those five that are listed in the Mishnah Psachim, we only identify two of those five. You probably would guess horseradish and lettuce, right? We use romaine lettuce. But horseradish and lettuce are the two that we know for sure The other three, we don't even know what it is. We don't even know how to identify. What this is, our kavlin, is none of the above, meaning it's not one of the five mentioned in the Mishnah Pesachim. And he heard that according to Rabbi Lezer, you could use it. And again, the point, of course, for us is that it's lo matzasi chaver, meaning it's not within the norm of halacha. Hajalachos and pasim, that's the end of the second parak. Okay. Two prakim down, and only eight more to go in Erevin. The first parak was dealing with a mavoi, right? The first parak was very focused in terms of what its topic is, and that is the correction, the tikkun of a mavoi, either through a lachi or through a kora. What's the definition of a mavoi? That was the first parak of Erevin. Our second parak of Erevin dealt with what is not halach lamaisa, the pasei beraos, the creation of the minimalist Rishus HaYachid by putting brackets in the corner and serving that as a Rishus HaYachid for the Ole Regalim. But by way of connection, however, the Mishnah did also speak about the topic of Karpaf, a non-residential Rishus HaYachid, and gave us four blot in Erevin about what the status is of what are the laws of a non-residential Rishus HaYachid. Midrabban is prohibited, and we've been spending the last 4 days discussing that. And now we turn our attention now to the third parak of Erevin, and now we start the topic of Tchum. Now, I know there's a Rashi, and I'm going to go through the Rashi together inside, where Rashi says we're also going to be talking about Chatziris as well, but as you'll see, though, our real topic is going to be, from this point going forward, the topic of Tchum. Now, Tchum means as follows. You can't go more than 2,000 amos outside the city limits. Okay? We are circumscribed. Now, we're not talking about carrying. We're just talking about walking. Meaning, we cannot walk beyond Tchum. So, how about fly beyond Tchum? How about taking a boat beyond Tchum? Actually, those things we're going to talk about as well. But right now we're talking about walking. You can't walk beyond Tchum. So, let's say on Shabbos, you know before Shabbos, you want to walk to a certain place that happens to be 3,000 amas in that direction. And you only can walk 2,000 amas. So what you could do is you could shift your center, your point of center. In other words, normally, what is your makom shvisa? What's your point of center? Wherever you start Shabbos. Right? I'm here right now. This is my makom shvisa. This is my point of center. I can go 2,000 amas in every direction from my point of center. If, however, you would like, before Shabbos, you can move your point of center. That's called changing your makom shvisa, so that now, going into Shabbos, this is not my point of center, even though I'm here, but my point of center is going to be over there. Well, what's over there? What does that mean? How are you changing your point of center? As I mentioned, it's like any problem in Yiddishkeit. What's the solution? The solution is going to be food. So what you do is you simply set up a meal in a particular place before Shabbos, and you say, that will become my makom shvisa, and that now becomes your makom shvisa. That place acquires for you your new point of center, so that you can walk now to your makom shvisa, and from there you can walk 2,000 amas. Obviously, it has to be that your makom shvisa has to be something accessible to you, meaning you have to be able to walk to your makom shvisa. Obviously, your makom shvisa that you create cannot be greater than 2,000 amas of where you are right now. Obviously. Okay, this is what's called Eruv Tchumim. Setting up a new Makom Shvisa is our second type of Eruv, which is called Eruv Tchumim. There's something also called Eruv Tafshilin. We're not discussing it much in Erevin. We get one daf of it in Erevin, I believe one daf. And Eruv Tafshilin is discussed in the second parak of Beitza. So we have some time before we discuss that. But in other words, right now we're starting the topic of Erev Tchumim. And the first question we're going to deal with, the first issue we're going to deal with is, when we say putting food in a particular place, what kind of food are we talking about? So, as Tosos, the first Tosos over here on the Masechta points out, and we're going to see this clearly as we go through our Masechta, for Erev Chatzeros, you need bread. That's a non-negotiable item. You need bread. So in other words, when everyone's contributing into the basket, in order to be ma'ariv, everyone's house within the chatzer, to unify everyone in the chatzer, so for that you need bread. We use matzah. Matzah's a little bit easier because matzah stays, right? You'll find out next Pesach when you reuse this year's matzah. So matzah does a good job staying, so we use matzah, but it's got to be bread. However, when it comes to Erev Tchumim, so it can be really any food. And also, as we're going to speak a little bit about, same thing is true with Shitufa Mavos, but I don't want to confuse as we're already going to go through a lot of details, okay? And that is the introduction to the third parak, and now we begin the third parak of Erevin. B'chol arvin u'mishtadfin chutz min amayim. So you can make an Eruv or sheet of mevalos with everything except for, sorry, I left out two words, chutz min amayim u'min amelach. You can use any food you want except for water and for salt. Water and salt are out, are off limits. We're going to talk about why as we go through the Gemara. But in other words, any food you want. And as long as the Gemara is on the topic of, and you could use any food you want except for water and salt, so now we're going to talk about other halachas having nothing to do with Erevin, but again, the common theme of this particular Mishnah is, these are other things where you could basically use any food you want, except for salt and water. Hakol nikach mekas meiser chutz min amayim min amelach. You're going to Yerushalayim, you bring your meiser, you bring your kesef meiser with you. Annually, in Eretz Yisrael, from years 1 through 6 in the Shemitah cycle, not every one of those years, years 1, 2, 4, and 5 of the Shemitah cycle, your meiser, your second meiser, is what's called meiser sheni, okay, which is good, that's easy to remember. The first meiser is meiser rishon, that's given to a levi, that's your first 10%. Your second 10% is meiser sheni, and in years 1, 2, 4, and 5, you have to take now the 10% of your produce and bring it to Yerushalayim and eat it in Yerushalayim. Obviously, that can become very onerous. Every single time I'm picking fruit, 10% of it I have to schlep to Yerushalayim. So that becomes very onerous. The Torah understands that. So the Torah allows you to do an exchange, and that is transfer the Meister Sheni produce, the Kedusha of the Meister Sheni produce, onto money. The money now you have in your hand, you get to hold. And then, when you're in Yerushalayim, you're going to go up three times a year, so then you can spend the money of Meister Sheni in Yerushalayim on food. In fact, the Torah says, in Parshas Re'eh, V'chi Yerbam, in Perek Yudalad, Pasuk Chavdalad, V'chi Yerbam Mimcha, Derech Yilo Suchal Seiso, Ki Yerchak Mimcha, Makom Sheyivcha Hashem Elokecha, Lassum Shmo Sham, Ki Yerchakha Hashem Elokecha. If Yerushalayim is too far away from you, by the way, just an interesting note, the Torah never actually mentions Yerushalayim, meaning the Torah never talks about the Beis HaMikdash, says the place I'm going to choose. V'nasata bekesev, the Rambam talks about why that should be. V'nasata bekesev, v'tzarta kesev yadech, v'lachta l'makom asher yichar Hashem l'kecha bo. So what do? You take money in your hands, the money of Meister Sheni. V'nasata kesev b'chol asher tava nafshecha. And now when you're Yerushalayim, you buy whatever you want. B'bakar v'tzon v'yan v'shecha, the Torah gives four examples of what you would be buying. Meat, sheep, wine, or sheikhar. Stay tuned, we'll discuss what that is later on. Uvichol asher tishalcha nafshecha. V'achalta Hashem, whatever your heart desires, you're going to eat it over there, lifnei Hashem lokecha. V'samachta atav v'secha, and everyone's going to be ecstatic. Good. That's the psukim that describe you going to Yerushalayim and buying all foods. It sounds like you could buy all foods. And meanwhile, our Mishnah says, yes, except for salt and water. Again, salt and water, no, and we're going to discuss why that should be. Hanoder min amazon mutter b'mayim uvamelach. If, let's say, you make a neder, I'm not going to eat food anymore. That's a terrible neder to make, and I do not recommend it. But if you make such a neder, in fact, the Gemara says you should make no nedarim. But if you're going to make such a neder that you're not going to eat mazon, so you're allowed to eat water and salt. Because, again, it doesn't fall into the category of mazon. Ma'arvin l'nazir, you can make an Erev for a Nazir. Okay, good. Period. Okay, so two other halachas that kind of made its way into our Mishnah, but not connected to Erev. We'll talk much more about it as we go on. And then the Mishnah returns back to our Erev. Ma'arvin l'nazir b'yayin. Let's say you're a Nazir and you want to make an Erev. Now, you know, as a Nazir, so you have additional dietary restrictions. In addition to not eating, to not being able to eat non-kosher, like every other Jew, but on top of that, you also can't drink wine, or any grape product for that matter, as a Nazir. You can make, as a Nazir, your Eruv with wine. Now that's, of course, very strange. Meaning, isn't the whole purpose of Eruv to establish a Makom Shvisa? And doesn't that mean that you're going to go to your Eruv and consume the food, and as a Nazir, you're not allowed to drink the wine? The Mishnah, obviously the Mishnah is presenting a tremendous chiddush, which is that a Nazir can make an Erev using wine. Uli Yisrael b'truma. And another chiddush, while we're on it, is that, let's say, any non-Kohen here in this room has truma. How do they have truma? I don't know. Maybe they inherited it from a maternal grandfather. However, they have truma in their hands. Meaning, if it's a truma they took off,
they haven't given it yet.
Yeah, well, they haven't given it yet, but it's not theirs. They have to give it to a Kohen. All right. It's a little bit strange that he has truma in his hands, but anyway, he has truma in his hands. However, he got it, he could use it. He can make an eruv with it. Now, eating truma for a non-Kohen, that's a misa. It's misa bidei shamayim. That is a serious offense. So, but nevertheless, you can make eruv with it. Simchas amar bechulin. Simchas amar bechulin. And Simchas disagrees. Simchas says no. If you're Yisrael, you can use truma for your eruv. You must use chulin. Now, if you read the Mishnah carefully, and if we just pause for just a moment in this Mishnah, you'll notice that Simchas argues on the truma for the non-Kohen. He doesn't seem to be arguing about the yain for the nazir. The Gemara is going to be sensitive to that. The Gemara is going to ask that very question, and we're going to discuss that later on as well. As Rashi points out, right now in the Mishnah, we're going on in the Mishnah. This is now not Simchas' position. This is everybody. Ulakon bebeis apras. If you have a beis apras, which is a field where there possibly is tumas meis, a kohen is not allowed to go into such a field. It's rabbinically prohibited for a kohen to do so. We'll talk more about the exact nature of beis apras later on. But in the meantime, however, if the Kohen wants to make his Erev Tchum in a Beis HaPras, he may do so, even though it's an area that he's not allowed to go into. Rav Yehuda, Amar Afilo Ben HaKfaros. Rav Yehuda says, let's go one step further. You can actually put the Erev Tchum in a cemetery and allow a Kohen to go to the cemetery to eat his Erev Tchum. How is he going to do that? The Mishnah goes on to explain, because he could, in theory, be transported in a box, where the box is going to protect him from the tumas ohel. And so that's where, how, he could make his Erev Tchum actually in a cemetery. Okay. Much to discuss in this Mishnah. I just read through the Mishnah. First of all, there's an interesting Rashi. The first Rashi on the Mishnah, where Rashi says, "Bechol ma'arvin eruv echatzeros utechomim." So Rashi says that what's the topic of our Mishnah? It's talking about eruv chatzer and eruv tchomim. Now that's a little bit strange because I told you that for eruv chatzeros you can only use bread and you can't use any other food. So when Rashi says that you could use any food you want with exception to water and salt in our Mishnah, and Rashi says we're talking about eruv chatzeros, that's very strange. When I say that's very strange, that's not me talking. That's Tosos talking. Tosos, on the very first Tosos on the Perek, says, Perish Bekuntras, Eruv Echatzeros, Utchomim, Ve'einira. Debe Eruv Echatzeros, Be'inan Pas, Lekule Alma, Be'perek Hadar. We're going to see later on, together in the Masechta, where when it comes to Eruv Echatzeros, it has to be bread, to the exclusion of all other foods. So for Rashi to tell us that our Mishnah here is talking also about Eruv Echatzeros, that's very strange. So, and Tosos goes on to say, V'chol Haipirka, Muchach De'ari B'tchomim. Our perek is talking about tchumim, meaning as we continue on in this perek over the next couple of weeks, so we will be seeing, it's going to be clear that our perek is dedicated to the topic of tchum, so it's fair and easy to suggest that this Mishnah is also talking about tchum. Okay, so and is there a defense for Rashi? Yes, there is, but not for now, not for the context of Daf Yomi. But yes, it's possible to defend Rashi and what Rashi's saying. Okay. In the meantime, however, what we have learned in the first point that we learned together in the Mishnah is that when you're making your Erev Tchum, so you could use basically any food you want, but you can't use salt and you can't use water. What's wrong with salt? And certainly the question is, what's wrong with water? They're excellent. Salt as a additive, as a condiment, and water, of course, is a staple of life. So why is it that salt and water cannot be used for your Erev Tchum? So Rashi, the next Rashi in the Mishnah, says the lav midi de mazon hein, because there's no caloric intake with water and with salt. Literally what Rashi says is that doesn't sustain you, although that's not a good definition of what it means, the lo mazon. It means there's no caloric intake, meaning it doesn't satiate you, it doesn't make you feel any fuller. So that's the problem with water, and that's the problem with salt. Okay. So, and we'll see how Rashi arrived at that conclusion, how did Rashi know that, and why that should become now the guiding principle of what could be used in order to make your Erev Tchon. We'll start with the Gemara. The Gemara now, we're on top of Chav Zayin and Aleph. I'm Rav Yochanan. Ein lemeidim in a klaus ve'afilu b'makav sh'ne'emar b'achutz. Rav Yochanan says, now whenever Mishnayos tell you like these general principles, you know there's always an exception to the rule. And even when the Mishnah says an exception to the rule, you should know, says Rav Yochanan, that there's an exception to that as well. Meaning, the Mishnayos are there to give us very basic halacha, but with every rule there's an exception, and even when there's an exception, there's going to be another exception. So Rav Yochanan says, don't be a literalist when you read the Mishnayos. The Mishnayos do not take into account every single case. So, for example, now, if you read Rav Yochanan's statement carefully, he says, and even if the Mishnah says the word chutz, you should know that even then there's an exception to the exception. Now, mechlal de lav hachakai. Now, when Rav Yochanan made the statement that when the Mishnayos say, here's a rule, so obviously it's not talking about our Mishnah, because our Mishnah says the word chutz. Because Rav Yochanan says, and even if it says chutz, so that means that Rav Yochanan was talking about some other Mishnah. So the Gemara now wants to know, what other Mishnah was Rav Yochanan talking about? Hechakai. Hasamkai. So the Gemara says, Mishnah in Kedushin, end of the first parak of Kedushin. The Mishnah there says, V'chol mitzvah sase shazman grama, anashim chayav v'nashim peturis. If it's a time-bound mitzvah, men are obligated, women are exempt. V'shelo azman grama, if it's a non-time-bound mitzvah, echanashim echan anashim chayavim. Men and women are both obligated such a mitzvah. That's your rule. But of course, that's a klal, that's a general rule, with exceptions. Uklalahu dechol mitzvah sase shazman grama anashim peturis, harei matzah, simcha, v'hakel. So the Gemara notes, of course, there are exceptions. The Gemara points to three exceptions. Number one, the mitzvah of matzah, right? Just a short week and a half ago. So the mitzvah of matzah is in common both on men and on women. The mitzvah of simcha. The pasuk says, v'samachta atah v'secha. Again, going back to Parshas Re'eh. So the mitzvah of simcha is also incumbent upon women. Now, in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, simcha had a very defined connotation, which is carbon and eating of that carbon. Right? That's the Shami Simcha that's brought on Yontav. Without the Beis HaMikdash, then it's a little bit more open to interpretation. What Simcha? Right? The Gemara does say, Ain Simcha Ela Bebasa V'yayin, eating meat, drinking wine, on Yontav. But anyway, there's this idea of Simcha. And the mitzvah of Hakel. Mitzvah of Hakel, which happens every seventh year in the Beis HaMikdash, women are obligated in the mitzvah of Hakel at the end of Sukkos, even though it is a time-bound mitzvah. So, three examples. Time-bound mitzvahs, women are obligated in. Mitzvah zesei shazman grama uvenashim chayavos. V'chol mitzvah zesei shazman grama nashim chayavos. And let's go the other way. Meaning, what about mitzvahs that are not time-bound, where we said women are obligated? That's not always true. Hari tamo Torah, period, v'revio, pijin aben. Three examples of mitzvahs which are not time-bound, and meanwhile, women are exempt. The mitzvah of tamo Torah, the mitzvah of period, v'revio. Interestingly enough, women are not obligated in that mitzvah. Now, yes, it's going to be a little bit challenging for men to fulfill the mitzvah, period, v'revio, without the help of a partner, but nevertheless, women are not obligated in the mitzvah. It's a beautiful Meshech Chachma. The Meshech Chachma gives a suggestion that the Torah would not obligate a woman to do a mitzvah that would be as painful, be so painful. Meaning, so it's not a, obviously, it's part of the fabric of nature that women are going to have the children, but in terms of the Torah giving a mitzvah to do so, so because of the pain that's involved, so the Torah is not going to be mitzvah a woman to do so. So suggests the Meshech Chachma. The period of Arivya and Pidgin Aben. Pidgin Aben, which is not time-bound. Yes, it's true that's on day 30, but day 30 is just a marker. It just tells you when he's no longer nafel, and therefore you have to redeem him, but it's not a time-bound mitzvah. And meanwhile, women are exempt from the mitzvah of Pidgin Aben. The mitzvah says, Shalom Azman Grama V'nashim Peturos. Now, what I did not do, and it's not now is not the time to do so, is that why are all these exceptions? Meaning, why are the three that we mentioned previously, matzah, simcha, and hakel, why are they exceptions? And why are these three exceptions? So there's explanations for all this, but And you can go through Rashi. Rashi does go through all the psukim that explain why these are exceptions. But right now, for our purposes, just know that these are exceptions. And this accentuates Rav Yochanan's point that when the Mishnah gives us a basic rule, there are always going to be exceptions. So Elam, Rav Yochanan, Elam Edim in the Klalos Vafil B'Makav Shenem Rabba Chutz. And even if the Mishnah says the word Chutz, which kind of indicates to you these are the exceptions, Rav Yochanan says no, that those aren't the only exceptions. There's going to be other exceptions as well. I'll give you another example that this is so, based on a Mishnah in Zavin. Okay, we are off topic right now, but we're speaking to the general point of Rav Yochanan, which is that when the Mishnah gives us a rule, and even when the Mishnah says the word chutz, that's not the only exception. The Mishnah in Zavin, Od Klal Achar Amru Kol Shenisa Agabe Hazav Tamei, anything which is being carried by the zav. Excuse me. Anything which is being carried by the Zav is going to be subject to being Tameh. Anything which is underneath the Zav, interestingly enough, is not going to be Tameh. Now, wait a second. Slow down. What do you mean anything underneath the Zav? The Zav sits on a chair. Chair is Tameh Medras. The Zav lies down on the bed. Bed is Tameh Medras. What we mean by that is that if, let's say, Rashi gives the example. Let's say there's a bucket. We turn the bucket over. The Zav sits down in the bucket. We say to the Zav, hey, could you get up? We need the bucket. That bucket does not become Tamei. That's not Medras. Medras is something which is specific, which is exclusively built for sitting down on, like a chair, like a bed. So anything underneath the Zav is not going to be Tamei. V'chol shehu nisa, shazav nisa alav, I'm sorry, but anything on top of the Zav, meaning that if the Zav is shouldering, is burdening anything, so then that object is going to become Tameh. Not Medras, then it's not Tumas Medras, but nevertheless it's going to be Tameh. This is called Tumas Heset, by him shouldering the burden, carrying the item. V'chol she'azav nisa alav tahor. She'nisa agabe azav Tameh. V'chol she'azav nisa alav tahor. If the Zav is on top of something else, that item is tar, like I explained with the bucket. Chutz min arai lemishkav amoshav, with a course exception to chairs and beds. Chairs and beds or couches, anything designated for sitting or lying down on, is subject to tumah. Viha adam, and additionally also people as well. Meaning that if a Zav is riding on the shoulders of another person, that person becomes tameh. Okay. Those are your three exceptions. Now, the Mishnah did use the word chutz. Rav Yochanan is teaching us that even though the Mishnah uses the word chutz, and the Mishnah then outlines three exceptions, these aren't the only three exceptions. There are others as well. V'suleka v'aika merkav. So the Gemara says, what about merkav? Now, the Gemara immediately questions, what does that mean? Hai merkav hechidam idiyasiv alei hai nemoshav. If it's a saddle we sit down on, so that falls under the category of moshav, anan hachi kamrinan, ha'ika gaba de'ukfa. We're not talking about the saddle part that he sits on, we're talking about that piece in the front. I don't have experience running horses, I don't know what it's called, but you...
Pommel.
Okay, you know that piece that you hold on to in the front of the saddle, so that's what the Gemara refers to as gaba de'ukfa, where if the Zav holds that now falls under this new category called merkav. The Zav will make it Tameh. D'tanya ha'ukav Tameh Moshav ha'tafus Tameh Merkav. And the tafus is Tameh Merkav. So Elosh Maminayin le'meidim el'klas v'afilu b'makv v'shenem ar'bachutz. Again, point made. That even though the Mishnah Zavim gave us categories of Mishkav, Moshav, and Adam, there's another category as well. So Rav Yochanan says, so just because the Mishnah said the word chutz, doesn't mean it's incorporating every single category. Amar Ravina v'Timur Rav Nachman af Anami Tanina. I'll give you another example of this, and that's our Mishnah in Erevin, third parak. V'chol ma'arvin mishafin chutz min amayin ha'malach. You can make an Erev with anything except for salt and water. V'suleka, the Gemara says, what do you mean? V'ha'ika kameim u'pichios. Don't we have mushrooms? So Elosh Maminayin lemeidim in a klaus v'afil ma'akim shenem ha'bachutz. And the Gemara just assumes that, of course, kameim u'pichios, mushrooms also is not included. So we'll talk why that is in just a moment. But nevertheless, Kameh and Pitrios are not A person cannot make Erev with commandment Pishrios, and so therefore our Mishnah, even though it says the word chutz, is not in, it does not give us every category. There are other things as well.
What about vinegar?
Right. So again, just stay tuned, because we're gonna we don't even have a full understanding yet of why, what's wrong with water, what's wrong with salt, and what's wrong with mushrooms. Okay. Although not everyone in my family likes mushrooms, but that's not the point. The point being that it's you can't use it for Erev, and we're going to discuss why. In fact, we're going to discuss it right now. Okay. So what we have now so far is our Mishnah, which talks about, gives us the very basics of Erev Tchomim. You could use any food you want for Erev Tchomim. The only exception is salt and water. And Rav Yochanan teaches us that even though those are the only exceptions, those aren't the only exceptions. There's also mushrooms as well. Anytime you see a Mishnah say the word chutz, these aren't, it's not that limiting. There are other exceptions, like we've gone through a Mishnah in Kedushin, a Mishnah in Zavin, and our Mishnah in Erevin. Good. And now we're going to be just start to get a better understanding of why it should be. What's wrong with salt? What's wrong with water? Why are these things not used for Erev Tchumim? So we're not going to discuss it so much in the context of Erev Tchumim. We're going to discuss it in the context of Maaser Sheni, and then we can work backwards and we can talk about it in the context of Erev Tchumim. Remember, Erev Tchumim is a din derabanan, meaning Erev Chatzeres is a din derabanan, Erev Tchumim is a din derabanan. So we're not going to have psukim, we're not going to be able to darshan in terms of Erev Tchumim and Erev Chatzeres. We do have, however, the mitzvah of Maaser Sheni, that is a mitzvah in the Torah, and we are going to have psukim. So the psukim and the drushas that we're going to use to help us understand what the definition of food is, lagabe Maaser Sheni, so what the Chachamim basically did is they took those parameters and they used it for the dinei derabanan of tchumim of our Mishnah. Hakol nikach bekesef meiser, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yosef bar Chinan, chan masni ha'erev, v'chan masni ha'meiser. We have two Amorayim. So one says that it's talking, our Mishnah is talking about erev, and one says our Mishnah is talking about meiser. So chan masni ha'erev. Now one learns on erev and it goes as follows: loshna elamayim b'fnei atzmo. When our Mishnah says that water, neither water nor salt can be used for your Erev Tchum, that's only talking about water or salt. But what if I mix the two together? And now what I have is salt water. Now once again, we're only a week and a half removed from salt water. We know how wonderful salt water is. We dip our karpas in the salt water. So in other words, that salt water now, it turns into a condiment. It turns into a dip. So according to one Amara, that would be able to use as your Erev Tchumim when salt and water combine together. The Chan Masni Amaiser. And another says, no, it's same point, but not making an Erevin, but making an Maiser. Lo shanu ala mayim b'fnei atzmo melach b'fnei atzmo de'in nikachin ava mayim u'melach nikachin b'kesef Maiser. If you're in Yerushalayim and you want to now, and you have kesef, and you have meiser kesef in your hands, and you want to buy food, so you know you can't buy salt, you know you can't buy water, but you can buy salt water. Okay, if the two are combined together, that you can buy. Now, man demasni a meiser kol shekena eruv. Good. If you're learning this statement on meiser sheni, if it works for meiser sheni, it for sure will work for Erev. And you understand why that's a kol shekein? Because Maaser Sheni is a din d'araisa. Erev is a din d'rabanan. So if it's working for Maaser Sheni, it's for sure going to work for Erev. Man demasni ha'erev al Maaser lo. If, however, you're going to say, however, the statement of when water and salt is combined, it works for Erev, it doesn't necessarily work for Maaser Sheni. Why not? Maitama Pera Be'inan. Because as we will learn, we haven't seen this yet, for Maaser Sheni, there has to be a fruit quality to the food that you're buying. It has to be, now, we use the word pre, but please understand, we're using the word pre very loosely over here. I go back to the Pasuk in Chumash, which we quoted already earlier this morning. The Pasuk says, you're going to go to Yerushalayim, you're going to buy bakar and sown. Now, obviously, those aren't fruit, So you're going to see it has to be a fruit quality. What do you think we mean by that when we say fruit quality? It has to regenerate. There has to be some sort of regeneration. And when it comes to water and when it comes to salt, obviously these are water and mineral. There's no regeneration of water. There's no regeneration of salt. So it's not to be included in Maaser Sheni. So if you're learning it only on Eruv, that water and salt combined works, it doesn't necessarily mean that you could use it for Maaser Sheni. Now, the obvious question is, if there is this pre-requirement for Maaser Sheni, so how did you understand the first position? The first position is that when I combine water and salt together, so it works even for Maaser Sheni. So don't I have a pre-requirement? Okay, so that's an important question. We're going to come back and we're going to discuss that question later on. Rav Yitzchak did in fact learn this on Meister, meaning that if I take salt and water and combine them together and I have salt water, so then I can buy that with my Meister Sheni money. Even though water by itself is no good, salt by itself is no good, the combination of the two is good. Meisvei, the Gemara challenge is based on a Braisa. Heid Rav Yehuda ben Gadish. Lefnei Rabbi Eliezer shall base Abba. Lefnei Rabbi Eliezer shall base Abba. Hayulok and Seer because of Meiser. What would they buy with their kesef Meiser? They would buy fish brine. Fish brine, the juice that comes out of the fish. Back then, extremely popular. Armelo Shemelo Shemat Elakashakir Vedagim Muravim Bahem. Now, he says, maybe you misheard, or you didn't get the full picture. Maybe that's only if the insides of the fish, which back then was really popular, maybe that's only if the kirve dagim is mixed together with the fish brine. Fish brine by itself? That's not food. So maybe it's only because the kirve dagim is mixed in. Ve'afilu Rav Yehuda ben Gadish lo kamar la b'tzir deshumna deperihi. And even the most lenient position, which is the opinion of Rav Yehuda ben Gadish, he only allowed fish brine because fish brine is a derivative of the fish. It's not the meat of the fish, it's not the intestines of the fish, but it is a derivative of the fish. It's the schmaltz that comes off of the fish. So, avamayim amalchlo. But in other words, salt water would not work. So, it bothers the Gemara. How can you suggest that we know salt by itself you can't buy with your kesef meiser. You know water by itself you can't buy with your kesef meiser. But what we are entertaining is the idea that when I put the two together and I get salt water, that you can buy with your kesef meiser. Here, in this braisa we just quoted, we are talking about the limits of what you could buy, and the very limits of what you could buy is the fat, the schmaltz that comes off of the fish, the fish brine. But that's the extremity. And even there, we have Rabbi Eliezer, who said, no. Meaning, intestines, yes, but not the fish brine. So how can you even entertain that salt water is fine when fish brine seems to be the as far as we're going to go? So I'm Rav Yosef. So to this, the Gemara's response is, L'nitzucha ela shenasa l'socho shemen. Okay. When we say salt water, we don't actually mean salt water. You're right. Salt water doesn't add anything. So when we say salt water, what we mean is salt water where a little bit of oil is mixed in together with the salt water. So in other words, it's a really basic salad dressing. Okay, it's salt, it's water, and it's oil mixed in. So Amar Lei Abaye V'Tepukle Mishum Shemen. So the Gemara says, okay, so it's got oil. According to everybody, oil you can buy with your kesef meiser money. So what's the chiddush now? So in other words, I have salt, I have water, and I have a little bit of oil mixed in, and I can take my kesef meiser money and buy it with the and buy that with my kesef meiser money. Where's the chiddush? I'm allowed to say mishum shemen lo tzricha shenasan demei mayim umelech behavla'a. So the Gemara says, here's what happened: is that really principally, When I purchased really water and salt, and what happened was is that the value of the oil kind of got absorbed in the cost. This is the idea of havla'ah. I'll tell you where you see havla'ah come up once every Shemitah, and that is when you buy your lulav and your esrog. right? The Mishnah and Sukkah deals with the following question. You know that you can't do any type of commerce with Peir Shvius. So, right, you have fruit that comes out of the year in the sabbatical year, during the Shemitah year, so you can't buy it, you can't sell it. It's Hefker, it belongs to everybody. So now you wanna buy your Lulav and Esrog for Sukkos during the Shemitah year. So what are you gonna do? So the Mishnah says, here's what you do. You buy yourself a really expensive Lulav. And then your Muvla, in that cost for the Lulav, you get thrown in with an Esrog on the side. Okay, this is what the Mishnah and Sukkah says we're going to do. I know it sounds a little bit like a little deception, a little subterfuge, but anyway, this is the concept of Havla. So the Gemara says, over here, this is what's happening. We're really, for the money that we're spending, we're really buying water, we're buying salt. And the oil comes in by Havla, and that's a Chiddush. Meaning, even though I'm not principally buying the oil, if I'm principally buying the oil, of course that's going to be fine. That falls under the category of pre. Oil is a pre. But what we're doing is we're buying water with salt. The oil is coming in behavla'a, and that's a chiddush, and that we could do, that we could buy with our kesef ma'aser money. The Gemara says, really, you could do that? Mishari, behavla'a, mishari? In the Gemara says, yes, you can. V'hatanya ben bag bagomer babakar. So, and now what we're going to do is we're going to go through this pasuk step by step and explain that when the Torah gives us these four examples, and we have, there's what to learn from these examples. Baba karmelam mishalochim bakar agav oro. So, for example, when you buy an ox with your kesem ma'aser money, you know not everything is edible. The hide's not edible. So, aren't you supposed to buy food? And how can you take the money and purchase a hide? Or as Rashi explains, I might have thought that what you're supposed to do after buying the ox with the kesef ma'aser money is that after you buy the ox, what you're then supposed to do is take the hide, sell the hide, and buy food with the hide. Meaning you're not eating the hide. So the first chiddush of the Torah is you don't have to do that. Meaning that you're buying an ox with the money, so the hide is fine. Meaning you're going to purchase the hide, and you're essentially purchasing the meat, and the hide's kind of like coming along for the ride. The concept of Havla. Or what about when the Torah says the next thing, which is sheep? You know the sheep is going to have a lot of wonderful wool. What, am I allowed to just use the wool? Meaning, aren't I supposed to be eating it? Obviously, wool's not edible. Again, not a problem. Havla.
You just call it tofu.
You could do that, but again, though, the understanding is that when you're buying an ox and when you're buying sheep, so it went into factoring in terms of what you're paying for it. We're going to say even a bigger chiddush. When you buy a wine, you can buy the barrel as well. Meaning, right, when wine sellers are selling wine, they're selling wine in a barrel. And what you're buying is really wine and barrel. You get to keep the barrel afterwards. Okay, again, do you have to sell the barrel and use it to purchase food? No. And once again, this idea of Havla. And one more example, Yankam Uvishekhar, Malam Shalochim Temed Mishehmitz. And also in terms of Shekhar, what is the Torah coming to teach us with the word Shekhar? Temed. Meaning that after the grapes were already pressed, so what people do with the grapes with these dregs, nothing really, is that they throw into water, it makes the water a little bit acidic. And it gives it like a really super diluted wine. It's not wine. It's temed. So it's somewhere between water and wine. And if you want, you can buy temed with that money. Even though we learned in our Mishnah, you can't buy water. This isn't water. It's water infused with the taste of grapes. It's temed. And that you're allowed to buy. I'm Rav Yochanan. Good. So this is now the four examples that are given the Torah of what I can buy with my kesef ma'aser. Each one of them invokes a chiddush, and the point being, the reason why we bring it up over here is that I can buy a be'havla.
But the master examples that he gave, it's impossible to buy the wine without the barrel, buy the sheep without the wool, whereas with the oil, it's
okay. Stay tuned. You're right on. The Gemara is going to talk about your. The Gemara is going to speak exactly to your point. Okay, just quickly review, and we'll stop for today. Okay, we finished off the second parak of Erevin. We talked about Bitul Rishus, whether or not Rebbe Elazar and the Chachamim were arguing about Bitul Rishus, whether that's a default position, or there's something more intrinsic in their positions. The Gemara's conclusion is that they're just simply default positions. But if you want to be, according to Rabbi Lazar, you want to be mevat to one and not both, according to the Chachamim, you want to be mevat to both, not one, you may do so. Okay. We started the third parak of Erevin today. We talked about making an Erev using all types of food except for salt and water, according to according to Tosus, which is the halacha. We're talking specifically about Erev we're talking about Erev Tchum, we're not talking about Erev Chatzeres. Because for Erev Chatzeres you need bread. And then we went on to discuss other halachas where food is okay but not salt and water. We talked about the halacha of Maaser Sheni, and we talked about the halacha of making a neder, not to eat food. And then we're at other points of the Mishnah, which we're going to discuss in the upcoming days. And then today's discussion in the Gemara is, first of all, the rule of Rav Yochanan. Every time we have the word chutz, it's not the only exception. There are other exceptions. And then we went on to a discussion of, what about when I combine salt and water together, can that work for my Erev Tchum? Meaning salt by itself, water by itself, no. How about combining the two? So we're in the middle right now of the discussion, and there is an opinion out there that says that when I combine salt and water, that would be fine. It becomes a condiment, although it's a very hard position to defend. Maybe it also is true for Kesef Maaser as well. The Gemara says no. For Kesef Maaser, there has to be a little bit of oil inside. If there's a little bit of oil inside, isn't that obvious? To which the Gemara says no. I essentially purchased the water and the salt. The oil came by Havla'a. And we're in the middle of discussing now this concept of Havla'a, where I'm buying something ancillary to that which is the primary purchase. Okay, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up right from the point we left off.